don't want to take up too much time to discuss that. I'll make some more remarks if we have time at the end of the hour. What I'd like to do right now, because I know this is, hi Colin, come on in. What I'd like to do right now is to go ahead and start the formal part of this meeting. For those of you who will be coming with us to the Dublin event in September, you're receiving a sampling of, hi Wally, you're receiving a sampling of more to be discussed at that session. But what I'll do now is turn it over to Tom Zalewski, who is the North American Regional Vice Chair of Healthcare Life Sciences Practice Group. Tom and I shared the North American Regional Leadership last year. His practice, he does both healthcare and life sciences, but his practice tends to go more to the life sciences industry. My particular practice tends to go more to the healthcare industry. Starting this year, I have just assumed responsibilities as the global co-chair with my co-chair, who is a life sciences attorney in the Swiss firm, Lorenza Ferrari, who couldn't be here today. I don't know if she's dialed in, but she's fantastic, and I'm really having a nice time working with her. We also have on our panel Tricia Kuhl, who is from Blake's. And she will be discussing cannabis also with my law partner, John Robbins, who is up from our Fort Lauderdale office. John leads our cannabis practice group, which used to be called Controlled Substances, and now it's just straight up cannabis because that seems to be what everyone's interested in. So with that, I'll go ahead and turn it over to you, Tom. This next, however long you want to take is up to you, and I will make sure that we don't go over to 3:30 if I have just a couple more minutes before that time expires. I will talk to you more about the Dublin planning.
Great. Thanks, Becky. So, like Becky said, we're really teeing up the issue for the discussion for the September meeting in Dublin. It's an extremely hot topic, I know, with my clients, I suspect, with some of your clients as well. It's cutting-edge issues. It's an issue that is rapidly evolving. I know in the U.S. there are fascinating dichotomies that are happening between at the federal and the state level, you know, clients are some are dipping their toes, some are jumping in. There's a lot of investment happening, what I think we're going to be doing. So Jonathan is going to be he's going to give you the regulatory lay of the land in the U.S. The enforcement profile, talk a little bit about some of the ethical issues we face as U.S. attorneys dealing with clients in this space. I'm going to be talking about, you know, some of the practical difficulties our clients are facing in terms of equity raising, getting the brand out there, and doing deals in the space. And then I'm going to turn it over to Tricia, who's going to be speaking about the kinder, gentler approach that cannabis take, or soon to take. So, John, why don't I hand it over to you?
Sure. Thank you. By the way, I'm glad Debbie said it's a sampling of what's coming in September. I thought you were going to suggest that we have samples, but that's not true. We'd have a much more crowded.
Sorry to disappoint.
We'd have a much more crowded room, and then we'd be swiftly disbarred. This is a hot area. It's an area that I suspect that everybody sitting in this room has probably heard at some point from some clients a question, an opportunity they wanted to find out about, can I do this, should I do this? That's sort of how I started doing this. I've been practicing for the last 25 years as a regulatory and securities litigation attorney, and about 5 years ago, we got a call from a client, and that was the genesis of Akerman's cannabis practice. We originally called it the regulated substances practice, but finally I am pressed upon the firm that they should call it what it is, which is cannabis practice. And it has grown, although I'm based out of Florida, and at the time we started the group, we had no law in Florida as to legalizing the recreational or medical use of cannabis. It was uncharted territory, and for anybody who's operating in this space, it really is, it's uncharted territory, and that's why it makes it so important that you know, people have good professionals, attorneys, accountants, insurance professionals, regulatory professionals, lobbyists, or policy folks to guide them through those waters. But, you know, the waters are a little challenging for we as attorneys as well, both, as Tom's going to talk about, the day-to-day in and out of actually being able to transact business in the state or in the country, and for attorneys as from an ethical perspective, and I'll tell you why. So I'm sure everybody here knows that you read daily, 29 states and the District of Columbia have some sort of law on the books, either for medical cannabis or for adult or recreational use. But the question is, even within those states, is it legal? Is it legal to consume, to cultivate, to process, to sell, or to have business in any way that is even tangentially related to the cannabis industry? And the short answer is that it's not. You know that. Maybe you guys all know that. But the fact is that here in the United States, regardless of what states are doing, cannabis remains a controlled substance under the Controlled Substances Act. It's a Schedule I substance, which is the most tightly regulated schedule. Well, you guys are healthcare attorneys, I think, in this room, so most of you know this. It's up there with heroin. Cocaine, on the other hand, is a Schedule II substance. So the federal government since 1970 has considered marijuana to have absolutely no medical use, a high probability of dependency, and an area in which there's not enough research for anybody to suggest that there are appropriate medical uses. And that's sort of the irony, is that it remains a Schedule I substance, so little research is done here in the United States, and then there's such little research that, you know, it perpetuates this in Canada. On the other hand, there is no tension between you know, federal, I guess you have federal and territorial government as well, provincial, and it makes the business a lot easier. And let me give you a little bit of history of how we got where we are today here in the United States, and then I'm going to hand it over to Tom, talk about it as a practical matter, you know, how we navigate these waters with our clients. So back during the Obama administration, around 2013, when, you know, Colorado at that point had a robust medical marijuana program, California had a robust program, and Colorado had signaled that there was consideration of adult use, of recreational legalization. The Obama administration basically issued a memo called the Cole Memo in 2013, then issued by Deputy Attorney General James Cole, basically saying these are the Department of Justice's enforcement priorities with respect to legal cannabis or marijuana. We're not going to interfere with the states doing what they choose to do on the regulatory side, as long as our priorities are met. And our priorities are keeping it out of the hands of minors, keeping people off the road while they're consuming, keeping it out of the hands of organized crime, and probably first and foremost, money laundering, which has raised a whole host of issues for people operating in the space and practitioners. And when I say people operating in the space, we typically talk about sort of two types of clients. We talk about plant-touching clients, and then we talk about ancillary services. And when I say plant-touching, a cultivator, a processor, a dispenser, it could even extend to, for example, we have a lab testing client, a private equity group client. One of their portfolios is a lab testing company. They approached us recently and said, you know, we've been approached. We want to possibly expand in this area. And then it turned into literally a 50-page memo to them as to this is what you have to consider, these are the, you know, potential risks, and this is what we, you know, believe to be best practices. Those are the types of calls we're getting. Those are the types of deals we're doing. A lot of M&A work, real estate deals, IP branding, it touches every area and every practice of the law, and so that's why it's really important to understand how to operate in space where you're dealing with this dichotomy between state and federal law. So, getting back to 2013, the Department of Justice signaled that we're not changing the law, but we're going to take this hands-off approach, which was followed shortly by FinCEN, which is an arm of the enforcement arm of the Department of the Treasury, that also said basically to financial institutions, banks, We're not going to interfere with you if you want to bank cannabis clients. But again, we have the same sort of priorities that were laid out in the poll memo. And as long as those priorities are met, you know, we're not going to, you're not going to have a problem with your federal charter, with FDIC. But as a practical matter, that's not really what happened, because the compliance burdens were so heavy and the suspicious activity reports that have to be filled out are so cumbersome that many banks, particularly federally chartered banks, are just afraid of this industry. They will not touch it, and that's why it's become an all-cash business. I have a client in Colorado that literally takes a bag with $75,000 of cash, smelly cash, by the way, I might add. That's what I've been told, to the utility company every month to pay their electric bills. And so it has raised problems with security, problems with, you know, the ability of people in medical states to be able to get their medicine, problems with payroll, problems with raising capital. It has been become very, very difficult. Because of the federal prohibition, companies do not have the types of rights that other companies have with respect to bankruptcy protection. Companies do not have the ability to deduct the standard ordinary type of business expenses that other companies can deduct. So it becomes expensive, it becomes difficult to operate in the space, and again, it's something that has made it very, very expensive. Everybody thinks it's a green rush, and to a certain extent, there have been some players that have made a lot of money, but there have been some folks who have not done quite as well because, and Tricia and I were talking about this before you guys walked in states where there are, you know, strong regulatory or medical programs, it's taxed high usually, the cost of doing business is expensive, and as a result, the black market still thrives, which is exactly what the industry does not want, because after 25 years of, you know, representing people who are being sued by the SEC, I could tell you that the cannabis clients I represent are probably the most transparent clients I've ever had to deal with. They're very forthcoming. They want to be compliant. They want to dot the I's and cross the T's. And so, you know, the federal government was sort of playing along, even though we still have all these difficulties. And then we, as of last year, as everybody knows, in the United States, we have a new administration and a new attorney general. That attorney general, Jeff Sessions, has made it very, very clear since he took office that he is an absolute prohibitionist. He doesn't believe that good people, in fact, the one that made my head spin was when he was quoted as saying, you know, I used to have some friends in the KKK, and I thought they were pretty good guys until I learned that they smoked pot. Good people don't smoke pot. And I mean,
where do you start with that?
Where do you start? I'm obviously not here to be political in any way, shape, or form, but I will say that made my head spin. So Jeff Sessions, back in January, as he had been promising for the last year, issued a memo effectively rescinding the Cole memo that I had mentioned before, saying that enforcement of the Controlled Substances Act is now a priority, and that's exactly what we're going to do. Threw the industry into a tizzy for all of about 3 days. People really freaked out. What are we going to do? People who are operating, there are a lot of mom-and-pop operations in the states out west. And I think that everybody came to realize that first of all, a lot of members of Congress pushed back quite a bit. A lot of even President Trump, as recently as last week, met with Senator Cory Gardner out of Colorado and assured him that the Obama administration's outlook with respect to cannabis has not changed and won't change, which is another issue to see the dynamic between Trump and Sessions, but certainly I digress. And one other thing is that, you know, this FinCEN guidance, these policies, they're really nothing more than that. They're policies. And so it's nobody could really have a sense of comfort that although you're adhering to what is prescribed by the FinCEN guidance or Cole memo, you can't ever operate with a true sense of comfort that I'm not going to be subject to civil forfeiture. If I'm a property owner, we have clients who are REITs. For example, I spoke with one yesterday, and they own buildings all over the country, and they have clients and they have potential tenants who want to come in and lease space to operate dispensaries that are perfectly legal under state law. But what they're running into is they're running into problems with their lenders. They're running into their covenants that they have with their other tenants, because, you know, the stigma is, while it's being chipped away, it's still there. Michigan, by the way, announced today.